You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Hi.
And it's me, Brian. And upstairs, there's a crying baby. It's not mine, but you may hear
special guest, crying baby.
Through the ceiling.
I don't like anime, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, like, that's about right for an anime podcast, though, right? You can have one crying baby.
That's true.
Particularly now we're on YouTube.
Oh, fucking definitely then, yeah, yeah.
Oh, the baby can be the contrarian, who's always the same. There's no good anime nowadays. You guys seem to enjoy this Gal and Dino thing a lot, but I don't see it.
Epic rant from a baby. Right,
okay,
here.
It hates me.
We are covering anime that aired Monday the 20th of April to Sunday the 26th of April. That's how days of the week work. I mean, in theory, of 2020. And we're going to start off this week with Super Shiro, episode 27, Don't Move. So, in this episode, we return to a jewellery shop, not the same jewellery shop, but a jewellery shop of the same chain. I didn't go back and see whether they just used the same backgrounds again.
They probably did. Yeah, he does specify that it's the same chain as the one we've already been to before, so if it looks very similar, then don't fucking question it.
And also we get a recap of like what the deal is with this show. So it felt like, oh, this, but I mean, filling time, but then again, they did two episodes this week, so maybe that's just the reason why they had to do fill time.
Well, then they've been kind of assuming you know the fucking score for the show for a bit, so I guess they have to feel like, we can't alienate someone just dropping in.
Yes.
By having a random explosion in the background, they're going like, what the fuck was that?
But essentially, the gag this week is they break into this store, and they've got these infrared scanning systems that you have to stand perfectly still for, otherwise you'll be ejected from the jewellery store.
Yeah, a big column just like shoots you out, like yeets you right through the fucking ceiling. I was thinking about that in a dungeon, in like a D&D type thing as a trap. I feel like that'd be really fucking good.
Surprising, certainly.
So yeah, the pair of them, Dekapu and Shiro, constantly having to stop and start. And the best part of this gag is when they say, "Oh, we like stop motion animation," and then they briefly change to stop motion animation.
It's in vogue right now.
Yeah.
Back, baby.
And the other gag is Shiro's super teleportation power, which can get you from A to B, but it can take you a very long time doing it. And the reason it takes a long time doing it is because he has to teleport through with the tiniest of holes.
Yeah, he opens like a micro fucking black hole kind of thing that he can... Again, he's got the super soft body, so he can squeeze through. It's just going to take a while.
Just like real teleportation. Or the way they've tried it anyway. I think they managed to move like one atom, like a few nanometers.
Yeah, I don't think it was an atom. I think it was they moved like a fucking photon of light or something. Something less solid than an atom, yeah.
It's something like to move something as big as a person would require more energy than exists in the entire universe.
We'll get there.
Well, it's got to improve battery. Technology can store all that energy. Well, for a billion years, maybe we can move somebody.
He gets into the jewelry shop because there's a dog door, baby. He's not going to have to break in.
Yeah, they were sensible after the last time, I guess. They added doggy doors in the back.
Then he has to teleport out the building again because the scanner's still on and takes him a very long time. And the... His controller is getting very impatient with him. He's like, surely this won't be the fake one after making me wait so long. And he's absolutely sure.
Surely not.
This is the real one. Anyway, it was good, but it's not as good as the one later in the week, which we'll get to later in the episode.
I mean, like, it's still good. It's still better than a lot of fucking shows. Yeah.
But, it's just because it's not, because it had got that little bit of filler of recapping what the deal is with the show.
Yeah.
Sure. Whereas the other ones just top to bottom gags.
Mm-hmm.
Then another short, Extra Olympia Kyklos, episode 1, You Are Hellenes. And this is hella good.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of stop-motion animation.
Yes. So, it's Demetrius is our hero.
He's not Demetrius, he's Demetri Useless.
Who is a very fit and muscular chap who wants to become a artist and paint urns. That's all he wants to do, and also kiss the mayor's daughter. That's the other thing he wants to do.
Yes. Very much so.
But the mayor is having none of this. He thinks Demetrius is wasting his life pursuing this art when he could be going to the Olympics and using that body.
Yeah, you're ripped as fuck. You can get glory. You're not fucking Greek if you don't get glory. And he's kind of like, he thinks if he can like knock him down, like neg the motherfucker, that he'll just like, I'll convince him to do the Olympics rather than this hard thing, which really isn't going to work out for him.
Honor and glory, and also money. That means,
yeah,
money is also important, but also like honor and glory, but also the money.
This streaming lark is not going to work this week, so we'll just have to put this up.
Is it shitting itself?
It is shitting itself again.
Sunspots.
I can't even blame Virgin Media for this.
I mean, he can. Fuck him.
Yeah.
I can. Well, fuck him. Tax evading piece of shit. Now the Rob stream, I can just like indulge slander, even though it'll be going out on recording. Who cares?
Okay. So, my favourite bit in this part is the mayor saying how exhausted he is. He had to tell four slaves to do things today.
Four whole slaves, man. That's all before I wear your voice out.
Yeah.
But then we also got...
Wasn't one of the things he just told them to tidy his room? Kind of thing.
We got Demetrius playing in the sea with a dolphin who's imagining that the dolphin is the mayor's daughter. Which then the dolphin shows up wandering around with the mayor later.
The dolphin is also a member of the village. Yeah,
also a better artist than Demetrius.
Yes,
the reveal that Demetrius is of no good at what he wants to do. So he ends up hiding in an urn to get away from the mayor. And it turns out that this urn triggers a time slip.
No, I think it's hit by lightning, which is enough of an explanation.
Yes, because that's why he thinks the dad's... Zeus when he gets to 1964 Tokyo.
Well, also because he's eating
a thunderbolt. Wow, so fierce.
Everything in the past is stop motion animation, but in 1964 it's all cardboard cutout animation except for him, who's still
claymation. Yeah,
it's sort of a novel. There is like some animation on the surface of the paper figure, as you know, moving their faces. Even just kind of the way their clothes are kind of moving as well, but it's still like kind of all within that cutout of the frame of it.
Yes, I wonder. I don't know if they're also stop motion in that way, like the old.
It's
film.
A little bit, or it's like I think it's either done that way, or they have animated in such a way that it's. Has a bit more harmonization with Demetrius, because he's still a claymation figure in the modern day when he arrives there. Oh, well, not the modern day, it's fucking Tokyo, around the Tokyo Olympics. Not the ones that have been cancelled, the other ones.
And I like the claymation style as well, because it's very loose, and like you can see where the thumbprints have been in places. And...
Oh, that's one of my favourite things about claymation. Yes. Like, I always like that in Wallace and Gromit, where you can see like the thumbprints and shit. And when everyone gave out about the were-rabbit stuff, and I was like, I like the fact that the fur is constantly moving. It means you can tell someone's been at it.
I've got some good guys out of this, because when he's swimming around imagining Apollonia is this dolphin, and the dolphin morphs into a vision of her, and it's kind of this big clay reshapes into it. And also just for kind of silly things where he's imagining two lads beating the shit out of each other, just two clay guys just literally knocking lumps off each other until they're just two.
I think he's masses. they're like beasts fighting, and they like eventually mass into like a vaguely dog shaped thing, or you know, you get some fun jokes out of it. Yeah.
There's a guy who plays a song who's also like a claymation figure over the end credits, and he just got like a live action mouth put over it while he's singing. But for the actual like figures of Demetrius and the mayor and such in ancient Greece, they actually have the mouths actually like carved out. There's teeth in there, and those are actually jawing up and down. And usually, Demetrius putting very despairing expressions. I'll never be a good artist. And this really adds on to the tragic nature of his character. He's just despairing of this. That's the medium was, I think, is very important to this, and It's probably pretty tough to find the necessary people who have the talent to do this kind of thing, but it really just sets off and adds to the whole thing. Like, these jokes all sound very funny. Just imagine, like, you know, some, like, classical Greek bust-looking figures, classical Greek statue-looking guys made out of clay, look very statuesque and, you know, really carved up, really, very detailed, but they're just mugging to the camera and literally just morphing to different shapes. It's just really, really, like superlative stuff. And then have had the medium changes when it goes into Tokyo then, and then it's the Clash of the Nostalgia. It's just really, that. And then besides that, it's like all these great, like little like special effects where you go through the time tunnel and...
the time travel.
Yeah. Even when you're swimming in the ocean, there's the little...
the little splashes and everything.
Little splashes and things happen there. It's just very, very tactile, bit of work here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited to watch more of it. I'm wondering to see how far they would get considering recent cancellations, but as we discussed maybe last time,
Claymation tends to take a little longer, so they probably have it in the bag. Yeah,
it's a short, they might have more of it banked already. Not that it, you know, it's like less work to do a short, especially a short like this, but there's less
work than a 20 minute or half hour show.
But you can see where they've been working hard on it.
I feel like you're not going to release a claymation thing until it's finished, because it feels like the thing where you don't have wriggle room to get things done on the dot.
It's like, oh, the claymation this episode was a bit lackluster. They must have been in under the wire. It's like, no, that's not going to fucking happen, basically.
It's very dry this week. You see it's kind of crumbing off on some of the figures there.
Yeah, I feel like it's not a just-in-time type production. Then we got Woodpecker Detective's Office, episode 2, A Red Light District Woman. This was on in the room with me, however I was late to it because of all the Funimation stuff constantly stalling as I tried to watch it on the app, which actually plays it, unlike the PS4, which still will not play it anything at all. But this is on Crunchyroll, so this did play fine. So I did just about get it in, but so my understanding from what I caught, you can correct me after this, is our poet hero takes his linguist mate 9 months previous to the previous episode to basically lose his virginity at a brothel, and he's going to also hire a woman in a room, but not to have sex, but to listen through the wall to his mate losing his virginity. which further establishes the terrible behaviour. It was established right at the start when he shows up complaining that he's going to be short on his rent again, and he's like, you spent all night drinking last night.
Where you got yourself, and he writes a really crappy poem about not being able to pay the rent and enjoying drinking or something.
Yes. But then there's a murder of the woman who the linguist was with, and then it becomes a Rashomon type tale, but it's not people telling their versions of what happened. But it's not like they're based on witnesses. It's based on what they imagined has
conjecture,
happened.
Conjecture, yeah. Yes. And as soon as they start doing their conjecture, the other guy goes wildly out of character. I think is the other thing, because your man is like, hey, you're a wacky guy, and it's like everything's normal, but it's like then you turn murderous instantly. It's like that doesn't. It seemed like too much of a stretch, based off the correct parts of the scenes prior. But yeah, it's clearly like both of them don't have the whole story kind of thing.
And then it ends with their three mates who we know are doing this detective agency from the previous episode saying, we'll solve the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they show up to say that as the police are carting your man off for a murder, it's like, come on, lads, get on it. They could have been there a little earlier and made this less awkward, but no.
I couldn't tell you the details of all their stories though, because I was still cooking my dinner and then eating my dinner while this was happening. Anything else which needs adding?
No. I think you did get the broad strokes of it. It was a fairly simple enough story. Just super creepy of your man to rent a room to listen in next door of his friend losing his virginity. That's weird. That's something a creep would do.
Yeah, I think that's the impression they want you to get of him there. Mm. Because that is the impression his mate has of him in his conjecture.
Because the women working in the whorehouse are kind of like, oh, you don't know what he's really like. And it's like, yeah, he's a creepo, basically. But obviously that comes across in this. It's like, ooh, he's murderous and violent or something, you know.
Yeah. I like how they both assume that the other one did it.
Yeah. And they're both waiting for the other guy to confess. That kind of thing. So your man's evil smile as the police are carting off his best friend is kind of like, you're going to get what's coming to you because you're a murderer, rather than from your man who's getting carted off point of view. It's like, ooh, his friend is smiling at him because he's the real murderer. That kind of thing.
Yeah. So I don't know whether these are the next five, the other three people on the list, on the cast.
I think they're in the opening, so.
Yeah, but I'm trying, because, like I said last week, everybody on the Wikipedia of the characters are other famous people of the era.
Mm.
So you've got, the novelist and music critic, Kodo Nomura. You've got the father of the Japanese short story, Ryunsuke Akutagawa. And Count Isamu Yoshi. A poet and playwright. But then there's a whole bunch of other people who are also famous people. Let's find out who these people might be. We're also going to see Sakutaro Hagiwara, a Japanese writer of freestyle verse. Taro Hirai, better known as Edogawa Rampo.
Oh.
So surely he must be one of the detective people. But now he's going to be a kid. He's going to be a kid because he was born in 1894. So he's going to be a little child. He's going to be he's going to be the boys' detectives club of these other authors.
Dear.
Okay, I may have to stick with this now. now all the pieces are falling together. Of where this is going to go. We've got Bokusue Wakayama, another poet, and Mori Ogai. I think he may be the surgeon, because this guy was a Japanese army surgeon.
Hmm.
But he was also a translator, novelist, poet. And father of famed author Mary Murray.
So that's a little more of the Sherlock Holmes line. It's like, oh yeah, obviously you go from like medical doctor to criminal investigations and shit. But like, yeah. There's a lot of it seems to be from artistic poetry guys who just dabble in also detective work.
Yes.
I think it happened, I can't
deny it. Yes, I'm pretty sure that must be why that he invited that he must be the other guy they invited to the previous mystery.
Hmm.
Okay, it's all beginning to make sense now. I've looked at who these people are.
Who's your man? What's your man again? The guy with the super deep voice that has been in a lot of shows the last couple of seasons, because he's one of the three lads as well, isn't he? I can't think of his goddamn voice now.
No, I've lost. I've moved on now. I've moved on to
my page.
I've moved on to my page full of grunge bands and Scottish musical groups.
That's okay.
Before we get to them, it's time for you to tell me all about Fruits Basket Season 2, Episode 3, Shall We Go and Get You Changed?
That is skeezy as it sounds. Nope, it doesn't involve going to a clothes shop. It's a special clothes shop. It's Ayame's clothes shop, who is Yuki's elder brother. And
He shows up to... Like, Yuki kind of wakes up with having some sort of nightmare about prior stuff, the way he used to live. And he's like, I haven't had that nightmare in a while. And his brother bursts in. I think on purpose, is like he nearly timed it quite well. It's like, I knew you were going to be depressed around this time of year, so I said I'd come in and fucking annoy you. But it turns out Yuki actually, when he offers to, you want to come down to the shop someday? And he's like, yeah, I'd actually really like that. I'd like to get to know you better, brother. And he's like, okay.
Oh, he doesn't normally say yes to these things.
So yeah, himself and Toru, obviously, take a visit to his brother's, it's like a supply shop, but also like a, custom tailor. How about that?
It's an arts, it's kind of an arts and crafts hobby shop. You get your, get your like materials, get your needles,
your threads and your bobbins and your whatnot.
And all of that. We also do custom tailoring for costumes for people who want to add a little something something to their lives.
I did like him bursting out from behind the thing. It's like, oh, is that my brother? And it's like, okay. And he runs at him, like, dressed in a wedding dress.
Full bridal gown.
The full
I was just taking on. This in, you know, because the hem was all wrong.
And he's like, is that, but that wouldn't that make it, like, man size? He's like, that's
it
right.
Is this is man.
It is for a man. This is a man's romance. He keeps saying that, and it's really funny.
This means, like, oh, a lot of custom tailoring jobs here. I see a lot of, like, nurses and sexy secretaries and schoolgirls and French maids. I got a lot of cosplayers in here.
Very popular.
Yes, cosplayer, that's right. But he's still, like, you know, trying to, like, get close to him. And also, like, his employee slash maybe more, Mina, she's very nice. She's going around in the maid outfit, and he's going, did he make you wear that? No. Fun. I want to wear it because that's what I want it. It's fun. It's a great way to just, you know, feel a bit more freer in your daily life and at your job.
She latches on to Toru to go, like, shall we go get you changed and put you in something nice kind of thing? And she's doing it kind of in a creepy way, but it's more as an excuse to give the brothers some time to give him a bit of a chat.
Yes. And the Ayame we know is very, he can be kind of obnoxious, but he means well. He's a bit of a thickened idiot, and he's kind of overcompensating a bit. But we see why he's overcompensating, because he was, comparatively, a lot more distant to Yuki in their younger days. And especially when Ayame, he basically got his way to live outside of the family compound, you know, and, you know, kind of be a bit removed from their control.
Yeah, independent, I suppose.
Yeah, and that one time that he was trying to get out of there, Yuki came to him and kind of latched on to him, came to him, a younger brother trying to confide, you know, and trying to get the help of his elder brother. And Ayame just rebuffed him and kept on walking out that door. And he always regretted that.
Yeah, they kind of talk about, like, the thing he fears the most that Yuki will do for him is kind of like have no feelings whatsoever towards him, because that's what he had towards his younger brother back in the day. And he since learns, like, that was fucked up of me. I'm fucking really regretful of doing that. But so that's why he's overcompensating by being super duper lovey-dovey with his brother right now.
But
gonna make up for lost time, I guess.
Even if he's annoying him, if his brother is fucking is yelling at him, and because he's annoyed with him, he's still getting a reaction out of him. He's still, like, you know, he's still like this complete.
Even fighting would be good, because at least that's a reaction. At least that's an emotional response. He kind of admits, it's like, you know, it's like, hey, you're my brother, and I know we're very different, and that's good that we disagree with each other, because you basically have everything that I lack, and I have everything you lack, like being charming and handsome and wonderful, you know. And it's just like, and then he goes off on a fucking tirade of how great he is again, and it's like, yeah, but he does appreciate aspects of his younger brother, and he, like, admires him for those.
Yeah, I think Yuki is getting to understand as well as fun. Well, I'm not going to see, obviously, eye to eye with my older brother, because that's kind of the way it is as well. Older brothers just fucking fight with them. Their lads are always fucking giving you noogies and, you know, and eating
skits. Giving you a hard time in some regard, yeah.
But you're trying to understand, well, that's the kind of the way he is. He's trying to give that support to me now that he couldn't do then or wouldn't do then. In his own way. It's annoying. It's fucking drives me up the wall why he's doing. He's got his mate here now, Toru, in all these frills and bows and stuff. I don't know. I'm absolutely mortified for her. But he's doing it in his own way. I think I try and, like, understand that and appreciate that a little bit more. I shouldn't have kind of just writing about this because he's doing things, you know, maybe the way I would like. He's doing it in his own way.
There's a few bits of the conversation that I thought were quite well done, where it's like, why did you decide to open up a tailor shop? And he's kind of like, I wanted to, like, make something with my own hands that wouldn't have existed if I hadn't met it, that kind of thing. And his younger brother kind of sees it's like, oh, kind of thinks to himself, it's kind of like his own garden, like, where it's something you nurture and it's something that wouldn't be there if not for you. to make a mark on the world, basically. Yeah.
Makes Yuki think of all the gardening he's been doing at the back of the house. It's like, we're not so different after all, are we?
Yeah, yeah. They have this similar kind of need and drive. And even if they do it in different ways, they can kind of respect the different way they live their lives. I thought it was quite nice. And, his brother's still obnoxious, but in like, you know, it's like, yeah, harmless, but, and also means well. So.
Yeah. Not we got so Toru bad. There to try and mediate and get the piece of bit because she's so nice left that way. Even if she does get kind of, get carved up into it and having some crazy gothic Lolita gown slapped onto her. But she goes around because she's a good sport. But as well, like, because she's there, Yuki is, you know, being able to open up more to people, you know, and this might, it's obviously gone a long way because the way that Yuki is actually, you know, agreeing to meet up with him in the first place shows that's like, you know, miles of progress compared to how they were before. And definitely better than how we last remember Yuki just being that lonely kid in the house that he just kind of left behind after himself because he's just probably at the time I was probably like a teenager or something like that. She's just always up by his own shit. I'm getting out of this fucking house. Fuck you, ma'am. I'm out of here.
Very concerned with his own like self-preservation rather than trying to help someone else out of it. And yeah, you can see the kind of growth in him at this stage. Yeah, another good episode kind of builds on prior established stuff, but like it adds more to it. So yeah, appreciate it for that.
Yeah, it's a fairly self-contained little thing. It's just, you know, it's more... I guess we're kind of like, you know, catching up with some characters. So we caught up with Kazuma last episode.
Yeah, we haven't seen them for a while. So it's like, hey, what are you up to now? That kind of thing. Yeah.
What's Ayame doing? Yeah. What's he at? He's still a crazy joker, but we'll see a little bit more of how he is, in his own little realm. And he's just always on. And some people are drawn to that. And I can't really deny that he has this charisma about him. So, yeah.
Right here. Then I'll quickly talk about Kamen Rider 01 now to split this up. So I've not properly watched this, but the gist of it is it's called Episode 33, Our Dreams Really That Important. And Yaiba finally realizes her dream, and that is to destroy Zaya Enterprises. And so it's her turn to beat up Guy, and which is... The best bit is the fact that she beats him up and then resigns, but the resignation is done in the form of the way the Kamen Rider attacks have been done. So they're like spelt out, like hammered across the screen in text, and then displayed. And then her resignation is them in their non-Kamen Rider forms and then her punching him in the face. And, but it ends with Hirobi asking, if she wants to help him and Jin destroy, work together to destroy Zaya Enterprises. So, So now she's working with the people she was hunting down at the start of the series is how it all ends up. I think Guy's only allies now, and they've not been in it for ages, are the vice president and the other board member who were hanging on to their jobs for dear life. So I don't know if they'll show back up now. He's got no more allies left. But it looks like next week it's Hirobi's turn to beat him up. So.
feeling bad for the guy.
Everybody get in line and kind of beat the shit out of this guy.
Yeah, it is a fascinating way, but I'm really enjoying it. The fact that after so many episodes where he's been an absolute dick and then he finally comes out on top and it's just a Pyrrhic victory for him. Ever since he came out on top, he's got his ass kicked over and over again.
Every episode, yeah.
Well, if you want to be king shit of the corporation, you're going to put a target on your back so everyone's going to have a go at you.
Yes, and I wonder whether there's going to be something at the end of this where it's like, oh shit, now we've got to work with him. because I feel like that might be what's coming up next, is like, now we've got to convince him to work with us, and he hates us all because we've just kicked his ass for 6 weeks consecutively. okay, now tell me though about Tower of God, Episode 4, The Green April.
April Levert. Avril Levert. We're still in the middle of the King game, the King of the Hill game. So you get teams of three. One goes in. One team member sits on the throne, wears a crown, and they can't leave. Or else they lose the game. But they got to fend off anybody, any other challengers until the end of the time limit. Which is, somewhat compressed and stretched and sort of on it, because I think it was 10 minutes at a time, but now obviously this goes on for a lot longer. What was this? Anak, who was our lizard dinosaur girl who just, sat down on the throne, but she's super strong because she seems to be, super tough, and also has got, one of the legendary weapons because it's got a little emblem on it, which has been reacting then to Bam in the other cell, in the other waiting room, because his sword is, wiggling and going crazy.
Kind of like the swords want to fight each other kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Also a little detail that's kind of glossed over, but comes to the fore again in this episode. There's, in one of the waiting room cells directly opposite in the arena, there's 300 figures who came by in the previous game.
I thought I mentioned it at the end of the last one, because it was kind of like a little coda at the end, yeah.
But just to reiterate, there are three which are previous. Finch in the previous game, where they whittled it down from 400 to 200 participants, but they killed everybody else. It was only just them three. So they just jumped.
That's why they have to do this combination thing. It's just this will make up the numbers of fights, basically.
Yeah, but they seem like pretty sinister folks. And in amongst their numbers, somebody looks quite a good bit like Rachel, who Bam is climbing the top of the Tower to see. So what's
he's shouting across. He's like, "Hey, that's Rachel," and he's like, "No, it couldn't be, because I think it's because she's not responding to him. But whether she's put her lot in with someone else, or this is some other doings happening, we don't know yet." Yeah.
Yeah. And it was left to Hats, the tattoo sword guy, and to his
Shibitsu.
It was just a kind of crappy tracksuit guy. He was kind of the brains of the operation to try and fend off.
He does have some moves on him in this episode. I can't give him that much.
He's talking.
He's not he's not great. He's not as good as the other guys, but he's not as crap as he seems.
Like, he's doing some Bruce Lee posing. He's kind of always he's supporting them on the act, I suppose.
But you just need to do a few of those, and I'm impressed. Basically, yeah.
But some of the other teams come out, and amongst them is the lady with the knife. He was having a war of words with her, and they're trying to get through that magical water barrier. And they just go at it because they're fairly, equally matched in terms of ability, and they're just slugging it off each other.
She's on a team with a guy with a horn who doesn't really do anything besides be there with one horn, and the dude who's in the sleeping bag constantly.
Yes.
Has a very clever plan, though. Yeah, it's two teams versus them, so the other team is it's a big... He's not a cyclops. He has a straight line of eyes. I don't know what you'd call
kind of like a winged, multi-eyed, alien-looking dude.
Yeah.
A kid with a knife and a big buff dude in a polo shirt with four eyes.
It's kind of I'll use my ultimate attack, and he just gets defeated off-screen, which is really funny. I did like that joke. There's a few bits like that where it's this guy's going to look cool. Hey, this guy's literally dressed as Zoro from One Piece. What's he going to do?
Yeah,
he's
going to
get taken out like nothing.
Some pale imitation, yeah. Just...
A fan, I guess. Cosplaying, maybe.
Yeah, that's all he is. But the sleeping bag guy, he's just I'm just going to lay low. And while you guys keep distracting it, and while Anak is on the throne is being all complacent, thinking she's safe, I'm going to sneak up on her, because I know how to use the magic to use all the spiritual water, the Shinsu in the tower. I'm going to blast you with a wave of that.
Yeah, just knock her off the throne, and then you knock them out of the tourney, basically.
Yeah. But Lesson doesn't really do anything to harm her, though. It just makes her really angry. And she just starts going buck wild with that whip, the slicing of everything.
It gets crazy big. It splits into multiple parts. It's filling up the whole space, the fighting room space. And they're just barely surviving. So his teammates, the sleeping bag dude, they drag him back into the cell, which one of the rules, none of them read the rules before they left. There's a long list of rules in the waiting room. If you enter in one of the waiting rooms, then you're disqualified. So they're purposely trying to get disqualified because otherwise we're going to fucking die. Fair enough. As the plan goes.
Yeah. But now, with all this thing going off now, Bam's Sword and Black March, it's fucking going crazy. Oh, and it's a shed off the outer layer, so it just wants to cut something real bad. And Anak picks up on that and just breaks into the lad's waiting room and just saying, "That sword I got there, fucking give it to me, because it doesn't belong to you, because that should only belong to a princess of Jihad, of one of the nations, who's trying to climb the tower. What the fuck are you doing with it?"
And he said, "I can't give it to you, because it's on loan, and I gotta give it back, so can't do that right now. And also her teammates are kind of like, dude, you left the throne and you went into the waiting room, both of which disqualify us from the fucking thing. And she's trying to convince him. It's like, how about we have a match for the thing? And the ref comes over and goes like, hey, fucking, you guys are disqualified. And she's like, no, no, no. We're going to fight over the swords, and whoever wins gets the other guy's sword. And he's like, yeah, that'll do. That'll eat up some time. That's perfect. I'm fine with that. Loose rules in this tournament.
Yeah. So they're disqualified, and there's some divisions forming there because Anna thinks, fuck you too. I'm just trying to remember the team. I don't even need you.
She doesn't even consider it a team. It's just the two guys she was with, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. But, Van was like, oh, I'm so sorry because of the sword, I'm making trouble for you. And it's just like, nah, man, we're going to get out there and fight. Because they seem a bit like one pissed off. I guess like they're felt like very condescended to by Anak, especially when saying, well, I'm going to take her up on her bed. She fucking thinks for nothing. Like, she thinks she won't last through this. She's got another thing coming. You got you with a cool sword. You got me with the brains and a bag of infinite Mars bars. You got big dinosaur man with a spear. Take these lads on. Fuck them. So they're kind of just kind of weighed in there, and they're kind of just fighting around, and just like taking out all these like the small fry essentially, who were kind of just getting caught in their own crossfire as well. Coon.
Yeah, Coon basically like takes the crown and like tosses it to them. Fight amongst it yourselves, you peons, kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I'll let them fight amongst themselves and whittle their own numbers down. It's kind of like he's planning in the first battle royale thing we saw him in, where it's like, yeah, let them fucking fight themselves, and I'll fucking take on who's left. Like, if they weaken themselves, that suits him fine.
Yeah, he's cool with that. But if we see him, he just nabs the crown, puts it into his bag, because like someone fires like an energy blast, and he just kind of opens his bag and takes in the whole job as well. And he throws out the crown out of the bag, and they all scramble to get it. But then it says, oh, Bam's on the throne, he's got his other crown. The crown he threw away was a dummy crown. Where did he get that from? I don't know. It's in
the
bag.
So I'm guessing that bag is like a copy bag, and your one, she couldn't use like the water the same way a lot of the guys use it, but she could use like a limited amount of it, and he did catch that in the bag. So I'm guessing that's something he has to pull out of his bag later, like fucking some sort of duplicating Mary Poppins type shit. Yeah.
Very much so, yeah. Well, that did seem the guy pretty handy, but we haven't seen what the killer team is going to come out, because they're going to like wade in as well. And then they ask the Rachel, or a Rachel looking person in there, is it okay if we kill everybody? And she says, as she looks at Bam, who, again, there's some kind of thing going on in her past. She says, yeah, it's okay, we can kill them all. So what does that even mean? Is it all the lies, all the sham, is there a shared history? All false and fraudulent.
There's definitely like some other like stuff playing on it, but I'm still liking the fairly loose rules of tournaments and various tests and everything. And I don't even mind them stretching this one out, because they keep changing the fucking rules as they go.
Yeah, and it was a good way to see how some of the other teams are out there. There's some kind of shit teams in there, but entertaining to watch. And even those dudes like Shibisu, who, you know, he's putting on the airs, but we get into a fight, he's fairly handy. Like, if it's just like small, it's just getting into a brawl with somebody of like equally probably human sized and just having to have magic powers or nothing, you can probably have a good go at it. He's also pretty smart with the more cerebral games as well. So yeah, it's in fairness to it, it's really kind of like latched onto me there. The still is sense with some of the fights where you're getting some like really kind of good stunts going on there, but it never lasts like too long. But I guess I whittle these guys down, the test gets higher, we'll probably get some clash fight, all these old rivals be settled nearer towards the end. I just really hope there was some kind of this, gonna have like obviously a cool fight between like probably Anak and Bam versus the two cool swords. Well, hopefully that Chibisu and the Knife Lady just like get into this like knockdown, drag out brawl where they're just like smacking each other in the face like two drunks in a car park.
Yeah. The less skilled guy is also getting their chance to shine just by baiting into each other. I'm kind of hoping for a lot for this. It's still fairly enjoyable. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, again, let's hope that the next game, it's a whole different thing again. Here's like a kind of a puzzle-based thing, here's a combat-based thing, and then here's another kind of puzzly thought-based one, here's another kind of fighting-based one. Kind of keep that.
I don't even mind like multiple fighting ones, as long as they keep changing the context of fighting. Like, obviously the context in the Battle Royale thing was like, okay, knock half the other guys out, now team up with two of the guys left, who presumably were people you're fighting and often were, as the thing went. And in this case, it's like there's a bunch of fucking rules where it's like, yeah, but if you fight early, you could lose sooner. But if you don't fight at all, you could lose. So it's like a there's different logics to the fighting. And, you know, it's swords hitting swords, but it's also like there's a internal consistency to the specific game.
Yeah. It was more games, more puzzles, and crucially, more weirdos. Keep them coming.
Yes, yes, please.
And then we've got Listeners, Episode 4, Teen Spirit, in which Echo and Mew head to Freak Scene Academy. Because this is the school where Jimmy Stonefree went. And they meet the director, Kim.
Who has been informed beforehand. Yes. Was like, oh, I heard you guys were coming. Cool. I've got this secret file here, which I'll totally give you. If you solve the drug problem.
Heard from Belinda Butcher that yes. You guys are on the way.
If you can find out who's distributing teen spirit in the school.
We gotta bust all these teens are getting high huffing aerosol cans. It's all up at 21 Jump Street, but they aren't 21 yet.
And that leads Echo to strike up a friendship with this kid called Nur, and Mew to strike up a friendship with the head of the school council called Hole. And they're both working independently, and we see a lot of the school, and a lot of school are visual representations of various bands of the late 80s, early 90s.
I will admit to like laughing out loud when Smashing Pumpkins showed up. That's not a spoiler, you'll know it when you fucking see yes. it.
Yeah, they're right there.
Yes, they're there, the Teenage Fan Club over there, Donatson Jr. there, BMX Bandits are there. Who else was
Slipping. Who was the frickin'... It was bugging me. Who were the math guys who were covered in mud?
Mud Honey, I believe. Because okay, the original band, they were called, like, Mr. Whatever Mark Arm's maths teacher was called, and the Calculations.
Okay. It was kind of lost on me. I was kind of like, I was probably thinking too fucking much as well. I was like, mud and math, mud.
And,
you know, just...
perhaps the cruelest is the guy in the library. I was like, hey, what's the guy? This guy, he's got a fairy buzzing around his head. And I paused it, and then I'm like, oh, okay, he's a big fat bald guy with a pixie buzzing around his head.
Oh,
yep. Because the pixie is like a really standout thing. Because yes. It's kind of like, it's not like we've seen much magic beyond the super robot thing that this world has gone
it's
on.
It's just stupid and it's weird, and they don't make much comment about
no.
it.
No.
What?
So this, I see you have a tiny pixie version of yourself. Let's not question that, as you are a librarian.
Yeah, so that tipped me off. This is in service of some very convoluted referential gag here.
Yeah,
but I don't know whether... But that may be foreshadowing in the same way that the explanation when we get of what teen spirit is also foreshadowing, because apparently... You should be using it at school, but there is a reason to use it, and that reason appears to be an army of mods who are huffing aerosol fumes so they can fight the earless.
Yeah.
It has military applications, but, you know, kids shouldn't be fucking using it.
I mean, the Beatles and all really, like, forsook their kind of principles when they became part of the military industrial complex, just handing out these cans of spray to the troops.
Yeah, yeah.
Nia basically hooks herself. It's him to Echo because he never figures out that it's a woman till Mew points it out. Because Mew's getting jealous.
That's kind of the reason they split off, because she's super popular, because she's the hot girl in high school and he's like the nerd, so he ends up like going off with the freak kids, I guess. That kind of thing. That's why they're divided, why she goes to the student president. He ends up with the random weirdo who's stalking him.
Yeah. Oh, the butthole surfers are in there as well.
There's a bunch. Because there's like a montage of them going around questioning the kids around the school.
Yeah, and so, the plugs into the amp and like this. So it appears to be like what you form is partly something to do with the amp and partly some sort of self-actualization.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's both the equipment you're using and what your own voice you're bringing to it is.
There's robot is like this kind of octopus looking job, but it doesn't look quite all the way there using Echo's amp. But when they use the one that belongs to the student council later on, it seems to be a much more complete form, which has like
it has hands and everything,
body
yeah.
and also just also octopus tentacles going on.
And Nier appears to try to commit suicide by taking their own head off the edge of the skull.
Yeah. Man, this episode I was still like, I'm not sure when it's going to not be, but still too soon, and still it's like don't make Courtney Love's band the reason that he got addicted to drugs and shit. I was like, oh no.
The good thing is they don't. They make it more like it's the relationship between Hole and Nier turns out
both ways toxic.
Yes,
yeah, for
it's
sure.
Toxic.
I mean, like that's a more fair thing than just blaming Courtney Love entirely. They were both in a shitty fucking. Both of them were taking a shitload of fucking drugs. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I have this sympathy for Nier because even though they're only getting close to Echo to rob the amp, there is still both this vulnerability in themselves. And it's only because that Nier is consumed with all this self-hatred that points, well, everybody fucking hates me anyway, and I hate myself, so I may as well just fucking do what I want and just rob this shit. Because no one will care, no one likes me, no, I like myself.
Mm.
And it's kind of combating that, even though Echo's going, no, you're my friend, I do like you.
Yes.
What's going on? It's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, when they start, Moo puts it together that, because there's like a scientific explanation, and she figures out, oh, they're storing the teen spirit in the,
Oh, you need to heat it to high temperature and then cool it considerably.
Yeah,
and earlier we did see, by the Smashing Pumpkins, that the pool is closed down temporarily. Yes.
So they're hiding it in the school swimming pools, and that's where we learn that the pair of them are in together, but then Hole makes the mistake of explaining his evil plan to sell, Nier to, the army, who I assume are going to represent, major record labels when we get to
them. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't think specifically exploitative, because obviously we've got the mayor, who I guess is supposed to represent Creation Records based on his name, so that'll be like the indie labels.
Mm-hmm.
Nir overhears this and, flees the school, because it's like, that's the only way to avoid going into that. So apparently the people here are being trained to be players. There's a gunbuster vibe going on as well in some of the scenes of,
Yeah, you got the robots doing press-ups.
Robot training.
Yeah.
What's the point of that? But I don't know.
And it's interesting because so far we've kind of seen the world up to, like, you know, the guys in his little book are like all these famous celebrities and stuff, but how many of them get killed on the battlefield or whatever? And, how many of them just get ground up by the machinery of fucking war is also the suggestion, which is, yeah, how many people like go into the music industry and then fucking get ground up and spat out by it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was still like a bit weird in this episode because I was like, I don't know if you should focus on the guy's death and drug addiction rather than the music and the meaning behind that guy's. That's a bit fucking much.
But it's 26 years ago now.
I know, but it's still like, I'd hate to be remembered for how I fucking died rather than how I lived, that kind of fucking thing.
Yeah, well, Nier the character in Listeners is out in the wild now, so.
Maybe they're trying to turn that around a little, or
it would be a positive end to this, because the music you make, you know, did touch a lot of people, and they can make a lot of positive change in the world by turning into a robot and punching bad monsters. But as well, it's about, you know, discovering and finding your own self-worth and overcoming the self-hatred that you have. So, you know, just think of it more as like an alternate universe where people like didn't die prematurely, and they can now see what could have happened if they just got the help that they needed, or had a right realization about themselves, about the world.
Yes. Like, it was a bit rough for me, but based off how fucking blunt this thing is being, it's not that unusual. And also, I kind of want to stick around just because Prince is fucking next week, so.
Oh, he's next week, yeah. And fun. Pull them out straight away.
Mm.
I'm fine with it being super blunt. I've seen worse, like immediately in the weeks afterwards. Or even like the weeks before. I can't remember when Chris Morris did the parody photo of Kurt Cobain did like weeks before of sitting on his car with a shotgun in his mouth. Yeah, so no, the bluntness of it is a big part of the appeal. It's like the sheer audacity, particularly when it gets to the fighting and their dialogue.
And he just starts saying the fucking lyrics. Oh, that's a
lyrics. When the lights out, it's just dangerous.
It appears to be, I think I saw someone talking about that. It's like, why was Nira just ranting? It was because she was on drugs or something like that. It's like, dude, fucking.
Listen to this. Like, be like what the name of the TV program tells you. It's listen. Be a listener.
Yes,
but well, I'll be a watcher. I'll be a listener as well.
You've got to remember, we're probably older than a lot of the people watching this. So
that is,
I guess, but like, it's not like you could be more Nirvana than literally just fucking saying the lyrics one after the other of famous song.
People won't know though. Are they very famous songs? Rock music's dead. It's been dead for over a decade.
No, my cultural appreciation of things is exactly the same as everyone else's, and anyone who isn't is wrong. No, I get what you mean. Yeah, they're probably just not getting the reference.
Yeah, well, they're still getting people who are fond of getting to that episode of Full Metal Alchemist where they didn't know the little girl's going to be fused to the dog, but I think they're also doing that performance because they fucking know full well. They're just acting like they don't know that happens.
Yeah, it's really, you pick it up like cultural osmosis, that kind of thing. I would have thought it was the same with this kind of thing. I was wondering, because Hall was talking about how much money it was going to make off the selling Teen Spirit. But it was in like the swimming pool and then like holes floating in it. Was that supposed to be like the baby? What's that album? I can't think of it. The baby floating in the pool.
Never mind.
Yeah. Thank you. Couldn't think of it. There were some other bits like that where I was like, I know that's an album cover.
Yeah. The font and the image of the Bob in the pool, in the title card is right there.
okay. Perfect.
But I liked as well how they composited this for the ending credits as well. Because again, it's kind of fun to see different ways that listeners could look. And I quite like the sort of more saturated version with the kind of the, we'll call it a thicker line, but kind of the outline seemed a lot more intense, I suppose. I think that would also be a good look for the main series overall. No, it would be nice.
You're right. Like turned up the saturation, turned up line thickness or something. It was quite nice, and it was weird because it's like before we've seen the compositing of prior bits of animation and things of characters, but in this, like it gave it a different feel. Again, trying to go with that kind of grungy kind of look.
Yeah, but then the song is very upbeat and poppy, so it doesn't really fit in.
No, the song is a poor imitation, yeah, for sure.
my favourite bit is how excited director Kim is that they've discovered who's been dealing Teen Spirit in front of the school being partly demolished by the fights.
Like, thank God you've saved the school. Yes. It's like, the school is fucking destroyed.
And the document's mostly redacted, but the bit about...
There is a photo of him and Prince.
Yes, but particularly that photo is the most feminine we've seen Jimmy look, and that comes immediately before the bit with Moo asking if Echo realised that Nia was a girl. And I wonder if that's to tie in with, like, is Jimmy... able to switch genders at will, or is actually a woman?
The thing of like rock and roll being like slightly sexually amorphous.
Yes.
Obviously, people are getting Prince. Fucking Bowie was that kind of thing as well. Yeah, that's not an uncommon fucking idea for sure.
Yes. Yeah, I particularly Bowie was what I was thinking of.
Will there be God? Would he be as fucking as brazen as Von Poor's anime boy in there? I would love if he did, but at the same time, some stones and fucking that dude to write that character in.
Well, yeah, they mentioned some. Well, we see like the past.
That was fucking great. Yeah, yeah, I forgot about that. The Beethoven and whatnot, the classical, all the classicaloids.
The ancients.
Yeah, and Echo mentions like who else has been to this school, and it's like it's a Keith Richards and some guy from Badfinger reference.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'd be the prior generations. So you're not going to get Bowie at this school based off the time scale. Like, there was an Oasis poster just straight up in the background.
Oh, I'm just seeing now, like, on the, there's like also on the gate. I was too busy reading the subtitles to notice that it just has The Wall written in the wall part.
That's so, yeah.
That's just labeling. It's not for any kind of musical album. At
it's
all.
The Wall from that famous thing. Fucking tip of my tongue. Can't think of it.
The Cold War, yes. Berlin.
Yeah, that's it.
Berlin Airlift, that's it.
Yeah, Keith Rowling and Pete Badfinger went here too.
When I say that, but Berlin is also a band now. No! You caught me. everything is referenced to music somewhere. As long as you just think hard enough about it.
So it's the Prince episode next week, and I don't know whether that old man is the one played by Shigeru Chiba or not. I think it might be, but I could be wrong.
So how delighted were you to see all of your teenage albums in cartoon?
it was more the ones who only really got a blink and miss it thing, because I was never that much of a Nirvana fan, but
no, same. It just passed me by. It didn't hit me at the right age, I think.
I mean, I preferred them to like all the other grunge bands, but
I got them much later, really, myself, because I would have been 5, 6, 7 when they were like really emerging. I got into them because I think it was an anniversary release of Nevermind, I suppose, around the time I was in secondary school, and that got on a lot of lads in my class, and then suddenly there was this kind of revival of Nirvana and bands of that era amongst my peer group anyway.
I remember somebody in our year had gone to see them at the Cambridge Corn Exchange. I guess that may have been with Shonen Knife as support. But I think we weren't a cool year or a cool school.
That's okay.
Until sixth form. I think sixth form is when people started listening to cool music. And also non-cool music, but, and even then, the people who were listening to the cool music were very rarely in charge of the six-form stereo, because there was the people who were sneaking off to illegal raves, and they were clearly the cool ones, not us who were listening to, the Beastie Boys, at the time.
Beastie Boys are cool.
They are, but they're not as cool as sneaking off underage
going
to illegal
raves. Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Yeah. Gonna see Prodigy in a field somewhere.
That'd be rad.
and this was before they let the clown sing. rest in peace, clown.
Keith the Rolling Stone.
This thing was so brazen with it. I'm just curious as to what other fucking degree they're going to
manage. I kind of wish there was a rap episode, but there does not appear to be a rap episode.
I feel like it's very much so fixed in like the more rocky end of things.
But the logical thing after this point, I feel like this is probably the end point of the chronological references. I think everything else is probably going to be prior to this. Because these are like the kids. These are
into older music. Sure,
yeah, because these are the kids. So, because obviously the
so
next.
So you're not going to get anything much beyond Nirvana, because literally Nirvana were being trained in this.
Yes, because the next logical step would be a Wu-Tang Clan episode, but they would have to, I guess, be babies. Or
that's a reference to the thing that makes so many fucking references. It's just going to be like a fucking Ouroboros eventually. I mean, like, I love it. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, it's probably not gonna happen.
You said BC Boys out loud, and now I'm thinking, what would they be like? And they would,
yes, because they could have this time.
They'd have the robots, but they'd be like the robots would be like machine ones, and it'd be like a combining animal robot thing, like Dan Cougar.
That'd be right.
Alternately,
they're like they're Beastie Boys, and they all look like Beast Boy. Let's say these guys with green skin and fangs, and no one makes any past reference to us.
There's literally pixies in it. No one cares. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Beastie Boys would fit. I think the Run DMC Aerosmith crossover would fit, and the Anthrax Public Enemy crossover would fit. But then you got to deal with like how they influenced new metal, and then they'd just be, I don't know, sperm and eggs based on the timeline they were established here. And no one wants to see, Fred Durst spermatozoa.
Give anime time, it'll go get there, yeah.
Only a twinkle in Mr. Durst's eye.
But yeah, Prince next time. Then we've got Apare Ranman, episode 3, and the final one for now, Duel. Which is obviously frustrating, because this was a really great episode, and it kind of made you think that the cars probably will work.
If they do mad stunts like they do with them here.
Yeah, and also if they focus more on the reactions of the people in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Also just do things that you would normally do in a race.
Yes.
Again, taking your cue from Redline, and before that, Talladega Nights. If you can't get to the finish line in the car, just get out and run.
Well, yeah, they did establish, like, whoever touches the tree.
Yeah, so the premise of the episode is they've got to move out of the storage area because this guy from Europe, he's very European.
He's all the European.
He's several different
Europeans.
He's a little bit French. He's a little bit German. He's a little bit something in between.
He's English fancy as well. He's having high tea, so, yeah. Definitely the fancy European, for
and
sure.
He wants to rent out all the storage space. And they're like, no, you can't do it. Let us use it. And he says, no.
I did like a Paris going like, I'm going to go complain. It's like, and your man's just like, I need all the space though. I got my workers. We got to have them have a rec room. I need room to walk my dog. You know.
And it boils down to, in 10 days, we'll have a race, my car versus your car. If I win, we get to keep the storage area. And if you win, Kasame will commit harakiri. And it's like, I don't want to see him commit harakiri. But
that's disgusting.
We'll have his swords.
And he's like, that's fancy.
Okay.
I do like how attached to his swords. Also, all throughout this, I can't remember the kid who doesn't want to be called a kid.
Hatoto.
Yes. Is constantly insulting him for being weak because he couldn't pull his swords in the previous episode.
He actually gets some great reactions in this. I think my favorite was him basically going like, oh, you're safe, little swords, at the end.
Also, Hatoto is from an indigenous tribe. He knows how to provide for himself in the wild, how to hunt and build a fire and create it.
I like how quickly, they established what his thing is going to be. And your man kind of comes over and is like, hey, show me this map. Where's the best place to get water here? What's the average temperature over here? What's the lay of the land? And
yes.
His family was forced to move across country, fucking history.
Oh, and they got saved at the start of the episode as well, though, didn't they? By
Dylan.
Oh, yeah, at the end of the last
and
episode.
The gangsters record, the guys doing the run, the attack mentioned he's part of the, what they called, the
something thousand.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be, don't mention that name again. And then when he recognizes the tattoo, and
he says to the kid, it's like, don't bother chasing down that, yes, they're killed kind of thing.
So you're like,
he's one of the 1003 outlaw gang.
Yes. So it's like, does he just know the tattoo, or is he the guy who's moved on with his life and is now a professional car racer? He's not a gangster anymore.
Is he probably the scary dude we get in the post credit scene who's making a sinister deal to try and
I figure that's going to be like a different character.
Right? I have done it, Anthony, and I've not watched the post credits.
It's just the black credits, so I nearly fucking did it, but this time I just let it run, and I was like, oh, fuck, there was more here.
No, there's a bit, then there was like a shady like businessman or gangster looking type, and all of his meeting, talking about this guy. I think it's a train car, but it could be a...
Yeah, because I think it's like a train mogul, because he says like, don't let them know that, like, I'm going to make sure the world knows that it's not onto the new age. We're still on fucking steam engines right now. Keep it at steam engines.
Sabotage, like a flyer for the race, and say, this cannot be allowed to happen. They're going to go out there and do some work, and going to send in the sinister guy. He grins and evilly, saying, yes,
I hope this is just a murderous Dick Dastardly. I hope he has an angry attack dog or something. I'd be fine with that.
I think that pair who we see, the other scary dudes, we have like one kind of sneaky looking dude, then a huge fucking guy with a mask.
I think they're the Mexican racers from the website. Yeah. I don't think they're quite as scary as they appear.
They're probably cuddly and everything, yeah, sure.
From the actual full character designs that I've seen. But yeah, I wonder whether it's going to be like people misjudge their appearances and things like that. And just people are generally racist towards them. Because it's America. Yeah.
I imagine we're going to get at least a thing of that, but like it's kind of getting us to understand a bunch of the racers in this setup, which I am enjoying. Because like you say, then you'll be cutting to the different racers' reactions to the crazy shit the racers are going to pull. Which now that you like or at least know the characters and understand them, that's going to be more interesting.
Yeah, we also meet Sophia Taylor, who is Al's chaperone before you can describe her as anything else. So she's the daughter of Al's nanny. So basically has been raised alongside him. And she's there to keep Al out of trouble. And doesn't
stop him making all his bets though, which at the point is...
Like as soon as he makes the bet, she kind of like, dude, no, don't do that.
Because they up the stakes, because Al is quite covetous of the Segway that Apparate has put together while he's scouting around.
He keeps calling it like it's a wind-up two-wheeler transportation device or something like that. Yeah, he has some very long name for it. And your man's like, cool, give me a go. And he's like, I'll bet your car for it.
You got it. Give me.
Well, no, he says no, and then he says...
He just says no.
And he offers like, his car.
He ups the bet, basically, yeah.
But yeah, I did like that, because it was a thing of like, oh, that's the thing all these guys are going to have in common, is they're fascinated by cars, and that's, no matter what other differences they've got, that's the thing that's going to unite them.
Yeah.
Except for Kasami. He's been dragged along with on this.
Yeah, he has no fucking interest in it. I presume he's going to learn a love of cars or something, maybe as it goes, or learn a little about himself. But even the, I've forgotten the, what's the Chinese woman's name again?
Jian Lan.
She kind of is like, talking to the team of the derby there, and he's like, we're entering that race, right? And he's like, no way, one of the cars could get totaled, and then we'd be fucking one car out. He's just in it for the business of racing them around and around and around, not in a cross-country way. Too dangerous.
Yes.
So, obviously, she has a great, interesting car. She's invited to come to this duel of theirs. She's like, no way, but then she does show up because she really wants to see what the fuck they're going to do.
Yeah, I also think it's probably that line that Kasami gives her of like, I had to make him stop. He wanted to make it go even faster than it was.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing which probably gets her interested. It's like, and also Kasami's like, his moment of doubt, but then he's like, then I have to remember for whatever bad qualities he's got, he's not a liar.
Yeah. And if he says he can do it, he honestly believes that he can do it, and I trust him that he actually will be able to do it. Mm. And yes, so she's kind of like losing loyalty with the team that she was working with, because she worked with them because of her fascination with cars. But what's kind of going to pull her away from that is like, we have to push them though. We have to move beyond just riding around and around in a fucking loop. Cross country race. Yeah.
Fortune and glory, pal.
Mm.
Yeah, trying to figure out who that mysterious character is at the end. I think he might be a character called Richard Reisman.
That sounds a lot like Dick Dastardly. I'm just fucking saying.
But he's voiced by Kenji Rosuda, so he's probably a bad guy.
I'm excited.
Here is sarcastic drawl playing out across this French American race.
We're not going to get on any for a while, but yeah, this one is kind of going up in my estimation, all right?
Yeah. We get the race then, and it's... Alice Darren is in his nice motor, his nice looking sports car kind of job, very sleek and refined. Apparé has essentially built some kind of train without the rails.
Yeah, like, because you initially expect them to roll up in that fucking half a boat thing. That's like, no, it's kind of like the basic frame of a car, kind of. Yeah, basic frame of a train, more so.
It's an enormous engine.
It's a three-wheeler as well, isn't it?
Three wheels, and, you know, just enough things to hang on to.
Yeah, like your man saying, is like, hey, we're late. What the fuck, dude? And he's like, yeah, well, fucking, I didn't want to drive after the test drive. And he's like, I added a seatbelt. Come on, guy. It's much safer.
I like that realization of a dog, because you think, okay, here is the tacit before me. I just need to create a machine or device that will go faster than this guy's car. Very simple. It's got to make a simple machine that will do that. And there's no, like, romance to it. There's no real, like, you know, anguish. Guy just to make it look kind of elegant or...
Yeah, because that's the thing he complains about when he's looking under the hood of your man's car. It's like, wow, this is a really elegant engine, but, like, it's too elegant. You could have, like, put more fucking power into this, it's BMW, isn't it? It's something not very fucking far off.
It's BMW, yes.
I said it the other way around, yeah. But, that's the thing he's saying. Is like, this is a little simpler, a little too clean. You need to make an engine that is more crazy and fit for purpose. Like, this thing is specifically built for just this one race, and that's all it's going to manage to do. Yeah.
It's not much on the acceleration, but boy, can it get a good top speed out of it. It can jump over any kind of trenches or little dips in the landscape. And when first comes to worst, you can always pull the red lever, but it launches the fucking thing like a missile free of its moorings.
Yeah, the way it looked like a frame of a thing, the entire engine block, like, just flies out of the fucking
the Osama frame. Hanging on for dear life.
That's a good fucking race, I gotta say.
Yeah, it was, that made me like, okay, I feel like this is gonna be fine all the way through now. And I like how, yeah, he admires how Apare has won. And he's perfectly fine. And he's so honourable, he won't accept the, Segway, that's the word I'm looking for.
I couldn't remember the long fucking term he called it as well. Yeah. Yes. It's like, here, this thing. He's like, no, but I didn't win it. Also, you won my car, but that's just our backup car. Yes. My other car is faster.
Which I wonder whether they're going to end up selling that to, the other team she can race.
Exactly.
Yeah, because that's the thing he says at the end of this episode, where he's like, we're using this car for the race, right? This cool car that we have now?
No. I'm building the car.
Out of a boat. What the fuck?
I did like that Sophie was like, well, I'll take it.
she's not going to fucking say no to a Segway. And she's just like, woo! And your man's just like, okay, stop.
Just driving in circles around them as they're going to walk 50 miles back to civilization.
dear.
I'd have to look at what the design of that, because hers is like a pink and
it's a pink pussycat from stock drives from Mackie Racer. It is like very much the same contours as that. Yes. But I can see in Al's car, if you just change up the bodywork, it's probably got a very similar base, and it kind of rides at a similar height as his car does. So, you know, some customization of her own.
Yeah,
you know.
We'll see.
The guy who was driving like a car that was like a purple version of Penelope Pitstop's car was, you know, the guy who was listening to like Rocksteady or fucking something. Like, how do you get speakers in there? that seems very much so on that kind of design, because I think his car does have like a mouth on it or something.
That's TJ's car, yes. His is the one with the mouth and the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He's the other guy from the outlaw gang.
Yeah, because he, in the opening, is like Gun Kata fighting...
Dylan, yeah.
Yeah, Dylan. And I was just like, well, fuck, that looks rad as shit.
Sort of like, well, you have got a samurai in there, we got Jian Lan, who knows some martial arts, you got Hototo can just lob a hatchet from 50 yards and split a guy's head in two. It's,
we're gonna get some good fucking action, yeah.
Mm. And yeah, this is mysterious man at the end appears to drive the most ordinary looking car.
Oh, you know, it's gonna be full of traps and tricks. And the dog.
The other two guys are called Chase the Bad and Gil T. Shiga. And they're voiced by Tetsuya Nada and Daisuke Ono. And theirs is just covered in spikes. It looks like something else. It's something which orcs would drive in Warhammer 40k.
Yeah.
It's a very Fury Royal looking guy. It even was a car in Fury Royal. Looked like that.
It probably was, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know quite what their deal will be. And it's going to be a long wait to find out. Yes.
Yeah. The way I'm kind of looking at it is like, this was like an early preview.
Well, yes.
Millionaire. It's my appetite, for sure.
Episode 3 of Millionaire Detective wasn't this week. It will be July 16th, hopefully. Because they're going to start it back up at the start of July and just pretend this never happened.
Are they going to like show the prior episodes? Because yes. I know some of the things are. Yeah. Because I was going to say you could lose interest otherwise easily enough.
Yeah. No, they're just starting. That's the plan, I guess, is to start it up from scratch. Whether that will come to fruition, I don't know. We've got two more months to find out.
Yeah.
Just in a pre-show, we got like, a little bit of the racing here, because if you had some kind of hesitation when we saw the car initially, these cars, models, I'm going to see them a lot. How are they going to be doing? But it just put them in a crazy stunt like this, which will probably be like elaborate and have more people involved.
As opposed to a straight like two car drag race kind of thing, it'll be a lot more interesting when they have to go through towns and random wilderness and changing the environment. This definitely set the thing. It was like, they can shoot a race and make it look good.
Yeah, like we keep saying wacky races, which, you know, we've got a lot of crazy cars here, but there's a much more direct one than this fucking speed racer, but also had crazy races across the universe with mad characters, just like getting out and occasionally fighting each other.
It's not exclusive to just wacky races or anything, but I think that's generally the thing people say when a bunch of weirdos in cars, they tend to go to that. Yeah. That or Mario Kart, I think, tends to be the other one.
It's all good stuff. It's in great company, in its genres, and I hope we get to see more of it soon.
Then we've got Wave, Listen to Me, episode 4, You Don't Smile. Oh boy. So much happens and yet it's a character treading water for the entire episode until the crazy idea happens right at the end. As we're introduced to more another character, basically somebody who seems to be another main part of the story now. She's trying to find sponsors herself by finding a new job.
Like, basically going and finding jobs. Like, hey, can I work here? Also, I'll sponsor you on my radio show. And it's like, that's not going to work. No. That's not how job interviews work.
And so she's immediately back with the guy she said goodbye to in the previous episode.
Because the manager, he's been involved in the car accident and won't be off work for some time.
And also,
his dream of the manager dying and him inheriting the restaurant has come true! Which I was just like, ugh. He's gotten everything he wanted, yet he's worked off his ass, so,
He ends up
pulling like a really long shift rather than finding a job.
It's not only the manager who's been run over, you see, it's also her replacement has been run over as well.
I did think her thing at the stand is like, what about that guy we hired for the thing? And he's like, he found Jesus and he fucked up. Yes. It's basically, he went off to Tibet.
He's gone to Tibet to become a monk. Yeah. Yes.
And it's like, what the fuck? His job was just to heat up the fucking stew.
He has an epiphany heating up like frozen curry. This came to him in a flash and he's out of here.
I hope he's very happy.
The key thing is they come to, well, I don't. It feels like it's an excuse to get him to stop hitting on her, of like saying, "Well, I won't see anybody, and if we're in the right position in 4 years' time when I'm 30, then I'll come and work with you in this restaurant."
It's what do you call that fucking backup thing where it's like if you're both still single at X age, you decide we vaguely get on, we're friends, so let's marry and just
her just saying it to get him off her back.
It's like if she did come to 50 or 40 or whatever age she said, she'd be kind of like, nah, not that guy though. It's just constantly putting it on the fucking long finger, basically. But
she would forget she had ever done that, you know.
That's true.
She had said that to him, like tomorrow. She's going to forget all of that.
Except she doesn't, because then at the end of the episode, she's like, I don't want to go out with him anyway, but I don't want him to go out with her.
He's my backup plan.
But also she's like, she knows it's a terrible thing for her to think in the first place.
Yeah, because it's not that she's stringing this guy along, but she's not, like, letting him fucking loose either.
Yes.
Because at one point he says, like, why don't we fucking hook up? And she's like, this is not really a thing. He's like, yeah, but you're not really looking for anyone right now, are you? And she's like, how fucking dare?
How do you know it?
It's true, but shut up.
yeah, so this other woman is... she says she's the sister.
There's something fucking going on there.
The guy who ran over the manager.
And so she, as an apology, because obviously her brother can't do it, who ran over the manager and was also in the car accident, he can't do it. So she's decided, I will work in recompense in the restaurant for free. And they're like, oh, we can use the extra fucking hands. So that's actually really handy. But she just seems off. There's a lot of things off about her.
Yeah. She's really worming her way in there because, oh, I hope I wasn't being over my bound to it, but I updated the blog. She's going like, that's my thing. Minara's going, that's my thing. She's getting way more feedback.
Yeah, she goes from like dishwasher to doing the servant stuff, and she's getting really positive reviews on the blog where it's like, oh, you're that one who's kind of quiet and weird, but you're very pretty. she's just like,
yes.
Ooh.
It suddenly like kicks into like a single white female gear. Towards the end. But that might not be what it is, because then the reveal is that she doesn't want to go home and she's been sleeping in the restaurant.
Yeah, because she was taking the piss out of him the whole time. It's like, oh, you drove her home last night, yeah? You went to a motel, right? Yeah. You guys did a sex, right? And she's like, no, don't be fucking weird. I drove her home.
And then when she overhears him inviting her home, then it suddenly becomes, it's not a joke anymore.
Yeah, it's suddenly like, oh no, that's. I mean, like, I joked that it happened, but I didn't want it to happen.
But then, thankfully, she gets interrupted by is it Kato, the guy who's hiring her
producer? Yeah.
Or Mato.
Mato, that's it. Yes,
it's okay.
And he's like, we're gonna do it. 20 minutes. It's gonna be 20 minutes, and we're not gonna announce any sponsors, and we're gonna pretend it's like some sort of broadcaster's
studio gaff.
Yes, studio gaff's gone wrong.
Because it's supposed to be like at 1:30 the hour, and they're gonna start it at like 35 minutes.
Yes.
Or sorry, 32 minutes. So there'll be like 2 minutes of like not dead air or whatever, but just kind of like all of a sudden it starts at not a regular hour.
Yes.
It's gonna really fucking get this thing going. And she's just like, but I don't know if I like a boy or if it's kind of caught her in a weird fucking point.
But it feels like what she needed was something yank
to kick her up the arse, basically. Yeah,
out of, because you already knew this wasn't going to last anyway, because as soon as the guy's better, he'll be coming to take the job she's been doing, and she'd have to find another job anyway. Also meanwhile, that's not all that happens this episode. There's some tortoises, some turtles that she makes friends with. Very complicated feeding instructions.
I think your one was just like complicating it because she's written down like all their different personality and quirk stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, yeah, just chop up some chicken, give them the chicken. They'll eat the chicken. It's grand. Yes. Make sure they don't fight over. Well.
I thought, oh yeah, I guess turtles can be carnivorous.
Is it terrapins or?
These seem more like a terrapin.
They're three different types, aren't they? Because they're all labeled.
They are different species or whatever,
and you
should
know who's who. She's wishing that she's like getting doubts in her head that she can do this on her own. Meanwhile, she also manages to lock her flatmate out of her flat, which means she ends up talking to the other guy from the studio, the one who, Mihari thought was rich, but wasn't.
And a handsome, cool looking guy.
Yes. And he leans in for a kiss and she runs away. Cause I feel like from the flashback that she's got a crush on the senior writer. That might be
the other guy with the exact same mustache as your man, is it?
Yeah.
Because
she's like the junior, because she was a fan of his, and that's why she's got into that career.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's why she's not interested in the other guy, because she's got a crush on, and I assume that guy would just not be interested because he just has no energy at all.
He's very low energy, I don't think he even loves his work. He seems like I fucking hate everything about this.
Well, I guess I work in radio and then working in radio, which is a local station in Hokkaido somewhere.
Hey, they're not local. He explains that. That's why they need that much, they need so much more sponsorship than she thought they were going to need. Because
he was saying she was like, oh yeah, I could probably get him for that thing. And he's like, no, minimum like 1,700. Like, but that's because you're like a no name nobody. And that'll be if there's multiple sponsors because like all these fucking reasons, like, because he doesn't have, because she's nobody, she doesn't have a producer or like a house she's working out of, so they don't have to get a fee.
Yes, and he's like, you weren't trying to find sponsors yourself, were you?
We're just walking around town looking for sponsors, right? That's not how we do it. But yeah, his plan is this crazy fucking unannounced broadcast where everything's gone wrong. He's got a, what's his weird story for it again? You're like a reporter who's reporting on an incident while something else is happening.
It's going to be a thing where she is reporting on or with the person who is threatening or has murdered her ex-boyfriend.
Oh, because that continues the narrative that she set up. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is good because she's got some background in there to be able to use that material, use that energy. She's got panned up and probably put on something pretty killer. One maybe intended there.
I assume she'll end up improvising again. And that will eventually lead to where we see with the bear stuff at the start, where they'll always say you have to keep to the script to a certain point, then you can improvise.
Yeah, yeah. Because they still have to time it and sync it up and everything.
Yeah, it's another. I just like how like fractured and all over the place the storytelling is, and yet it still holds together. I like the...
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's like I said, not much happens in it, but there's a lot... happening in it. It kind of like it takes its time slowly, but there's so much fucking just people shouting back and forth to each other.
Even a tortoise talking, but
yeah, but she uses the tortoise to realize it's like, okay, talking on radio, you're not going to get that back and forth because the tortoises are only giving it in the little speech bubbles. They're not giving it anything else.
It's this portrait of this woman who just is not quite sure which way she could or should be going, but she's going to keep going and doing things. Just keep on doing. It's going to probably fuck up a lot of things, but, you know, if I just keep doing stuff, you know, at fast enough, people forget about the dumb stuff I did this previous season. Maybe that'll help gloss it over and also help me gloss it over in my mind, but then I just keep dredging it up in my worst moments.
Yeah, like just being the shark and just keep swimming, otherwise you'll drown kind of thing.
Yeah, actually, that's her approach to radio from what we've seen so far, is just keep on going and going and going and going. But she has a talent for kind of keeping a thread of it together, even
in her life, going on.
It's like, well, very taking a breath. So, it's, you know, there's applications for it.
I think the dated reference in this one was she kind of, your woman leaves for the morning to go to work, and she falls asleep for like 3 hours and tries to answer her back, and it's like that scene in The Walking Dead. I was just like, ah, jeez. Okay, a little more contemporary, but okay, keep going.
And the comic's been running since 2014, so maybe it's just like kind of set probably in around just before that time.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much in the modern day, but it's still been like 5 or 6 years removed from where we are now. So just at the pace that cultural references move nowadays, it's
probably been around. Sure,
it's like a half a century ago. It's on some scales, you know.
Then we've got another episode of Super Shiro, episode 28, Muscles, Muscles, Muscles. In which we return to the park, because did you know that when humans leave the park at night, it becomes the domain of the animal? They get to use it for whatever they want to use it for. And in this case, a bodybuilding contest and trivia.
It's bodybuilding trivia?
It is. Well, it's two types of questions. One is identifying where muscles are on the body, and then completing a well-known phrase or saying with the word muscle.
Which not might necessarily have the word muscle in it. It's like, but that completing it will have the word muscle in it. That's a little hint there.
Yes, because the Boba Bone this week is, or this episode, is the prize for coming first in this contest.
The trophy.
And the two little puny dogs are going to steal it to begin with. And then the big burly dog who we've seen before, who can't talk, comes along and sets them aside. You've got to take part in this contest. But how are they going to do it? Their bodies are too puny. Everybody else is absolutely ripped. So Super Shiro,
seen that bulldog? He's shredded.
Uses his super soft body power and inflates himself
and just draws some muscles on.
Yeah. Shapes himself.
Oh, and tightens the belt around to get the shape right. Yeah.
And Dekapu builds himself a new body out of cardboard.
I fucking love that, because they were like, look at that guy, he's built like a brick shit house.
I did like the fact that nobody is suspicious.
Yeah, all the other dogs are looking at him going like, whoa, that guy's big. And not the smartest guy.
And it's the trivia which undoes Dekapu, not the bodybuilding part.
Yeah, because the two-part questions are, finish this phrase. The phrase will involve the word muscles, even if it didn't before. And which part of the body is this muscle located? And you can't just say it. You have to point to it on your own ripped body, which I think that's a good way to get the muscle you're part in.
Oh, the crow's hosting this show.
A day job, maybe? I don't know.
I do like the fact, I did like it because he's the person who's got the least cartoon-like voice in the show, the crow. And so it made sense that he would be the host of this show within a show. And the other dog cannot speak, so he just growls and points at the appropriate muscle. So in the end, Dekapu, whenever he answers, he gets it wrong. So he puts a replacement, a decoy body, hides in a weight, and tries to steal it and gets thrown into the sky. And because the other dog's off doing that, that allows Shiro to answer the final question and get the bone. And I did like that the controller calls him muscle champion, and he gets like the little embarrassed Shin-chan face that Shin-chan gets when he's embarrassed.
That was a nice touch.
And then, of course, it blows up.
Yeah, it wasn't the bone. I'm going to think either A, there is no bone, or B, all of these are the bones, and the teleportation is just like, it explodes at the end. I don't fucking know. It probably doesn't matter.
I suspect probably the latter. But hey, it was saved again from the paws of evil. Yeah, I think that's the gist of it. Enjoyed it. Highly enjoyed it. I like seeing all the other animal designs.
It's always fun to see how other dogs interact with these two weirdo dogs we see fighting with each other week to week. And it's like, are they an outlier? Is every dog in this town just as crazy? But I suppose they're a special case.
Well, Meg, you got a bunch of bodybuilding dogs. So yes, there are a bunch of crazy fucking dogs in this, this setup. Yeah.
Then finally, unless anyone's got any sneaky ones they want to get in before
I got up to date on Precure, anyway.
Oh, yes, I forgot all about Precure. Tell us about Precure.
In episode 11, combining powers, miracle healing. It was the conclusion of their crisis they were going through, trying to take on three giant mega Byogens, giant monsters at once. They got rid of one, had to split up and then regroup to try and take it out, but in the meantime, they have let the other ones kind of grow out of control. So there's one in the river that's tormenting a water spirit. They're able to take that one out just about. But the one over in the fields, it's made up of flowers. It's gone supersized.
Oh, are you there, Niall? Have Virgin cut you off?
Yeah, it's cut off for me as well.
Alas and alack. I can see his face there, but he's not in the top part. Well, I guess we'll wait to see whether... If he comes back, he can explain more Precure. Otherwise, I guess we should start on Gallen Dinosaur, because we don't know how long he's going to be cut off for.
I suppose to take some time, because it'll take a while to say it. The name of the park in Super Shiro episode 28 was drank what looked like barley tea, but turned out to be Soy Sauce Park. Which I fucking love.
Yes.
That's really funny.
So, Gallen Dino, episode 4. Stop messing with my tail. And Merry Christmas. So, we open in the apartment. And Dino, he's watching TV.
And watching a documentary about lizards. A lot of documentaries. She must be fucking subscribed to some documentary channel.
Or they're just on NHK or something. NHKE maybe. So he's watching that and she's on the phone. And she wanders across to get something and steps on his tail.
Mm, she's looking for a manga that her friend on the phone lent her, basically. And he's fairly annoyed about that. And she's kind of like, oh, fuck, sorry, dude. It's kind of huge and in the way.
Yes. Can't you wrap it around yourself? So he holds it around himself and he has photos taken. He gets excited, lets go of his tail and hits her in the face with the tail. So I guess they're even at that point.
Yeah.
Then they try to tie it down and it just throttles him.
Yeah, and he's got some marks around his neck that it's going to take some explaining to do.
She thinks it's hilarious, but he's just dying. Then she tries to make it super visible by drawing on it, but it just tickles him.
Also, she pretty much just doodles and writes the word tail on his tail.
Yes, and a bunny rabbit. Yeah. He immediately goes to wash it off.
Without saying anything. Not that he says anything.
I was going to say, he never says anything.
But he doesn't react. He just goes like, oh, I'm just going to wash.
And then she's like, I heard something about lizard tails. You could cut them off and they'll grow back. And she's standing there with a pair of scissors in the dark. Cut to his horrified face, and that's the end of that sketch.
That was a weird setup, because I saw that the documentary, that was the part of it we heard that they were watching, but I was like, they're going to come back to that, right? And they did, but yeah.
Then we get one of the shorts, It's Not a Filter, where we see Dino is putting on Kaede's makeup, and then she comes back.
And she's initially like seems annoyed, but then she's like, okay, no, that's actually really funny.
Yes. Then Merry Christmas.
Oh, before that, and I forgot to mention it last week. I could not find him in the Where's Dino last week, but I did find him this week.
Yeah, ditto. I forgot to mention it last week as well. I meant to mention it.
Last week was like, whoa, that was fucking level 3, because I did okay at level 4 difficulty. I was like, oh, there he is, standing backwards.
What the hell? When did I get from the call there? Sorry.
Oh, quite a while ago. We're into the second main segment of Galen Dinosaur at this point.
Sorry,
okay, right. I had the window minimized. Thanks for telling me.
Sorry, dude. I dropped it in the chat there, but yeah, I guess you didn't get the message.
Yeah, I guess similarly that we couldn't hear us, you didn't get the message either.
Yeah, fuck, I didn't think of that. I should have sent it on a different method.
Okay, let's take a short break from Galen Dinosaur to check back in on Pretty Cure.
Well, I don't know where I cut out, so I don't know what happened.
Pretty much immediately.
Yeah, you were doing the setup, and I'm not actually sure, like, straight away, basically.
All right, well, to reiterate, there's, like, trying to fend off the last of these giant monsters. They've gotten two down, but they're struggling with the last one, but it's, like, made out of flowers, and some kind of evil dandelion, because all of the flippers that float in the wind are now bombs, and they're blowing shit up. So they get rebuffed by that, and they gotta regroup. It's gotten so big that now it's actually putting out seeds, and it creates a little seed that spits out, which grows creepy legs and crawls off into the undergrowth. Which Darizu, he's like the hench dude on site today. Well, they're all been on site, but he's the one left right over now. It's like, huh, it's a cool little feature. When am I doing more of that? But they're pretty down on themselves because, oh, fuck it. If we just can't come through with a plan from the off rather than splitting up and regrouping and doing all, trying to take it to, or take these things on by our own ourselves, we'll be in this mess. But no, the guy's saying, now lads, let's not be too down on ourselves. We had three of these monsters on our ass. We took care of one together. We took care of a second one together. We took care of the third one together as well. We just got to think it through and grit it out and not give up. Because when I was in the hospital all those years, doctors were stumped as what was wrong with me. But they kept on trying. They figured it out. And together with them, we just kind of fought through it. But see, because if they'd given up, I could have died. I could have been in hospital the rest of my life. So it got to not give up so soon, not give up so easily. So the other element spirits in the forest got kind of blown away to, because also they don't know where they are, but element spirits lead them back to where they are. And also gift them, they get a new attachment for the wands. It's just the bit that lets them do the team up attack, where they can all shoot a beam ball at once and purify the monster. And it's, what's it, the healing cure oasis, it's okay. I've seen better team attack modes, but it's only the first iteration, so it could be better.
Mm-hmm.
But it does beat that monster by the skin of their teeth. So day is safe for now, but the seed we saw creeping around in the undergrowth is attacks and latches onto an animal we're familiar with from other anime, a koipu or nutria. And it seems to meld with it and mutate it, and it turns up in the next episode, Potter's One, the great teamwork plan, as a new henchman who just shows up with the rest of the germ patrol. He's Bate Temoda. He's just this kind of skeezy dude. He's half man, half koipu. He's all bad. But he's kind of does it well, ingratiating himself to the existing hench people, you know, saying a chinjoine of, oh, you're so beautiful and pretty. Oh, stop, please. And you, Guayara, you're a fun, a big, strong guy. You're also very, very smart. Well, I know that. So they said, oh, well, let this guy off. Let him have a go at a precure. He seems to be on the level. He's got a lot of moxie. So the girls are reflecting on their struggle in the last episode, and they've got to build up our teamwork. We're not going to do some kind of training montage, climbing upstairs, like, you know, or trying to cross a tripwire while a stern kung fu master bats you with a cane. We're going to go to the Toei rock quarry and build up our teamwork by playing charades to try and, you know, get this kind of mental synchronization going on. See if we can, like, you know, anticipate each other's actions, and so we can, like, work better together as a team. They struggle initially when this guy shows up, because besides making a giant monster out of a digger, which is just fucking flicking off infected rocks and infecting the whole toy quarry, this Bate Temoda is a pretty strong opponent himself. He's just jumping in, doing a diving kicks and knocking them out of the way. They've got their hands full of them all over. But they're able to kind of figure out a strategy anyway. And again, just about managed to beat this dude again, but it's going to do teeth. So they think, okay, well, had a bit of trouble there again, but we'll kind of build up on that and see if we can get him again next time. Like, Noda and Chi are trying to take the positive out of this, but Hinata is kind of beginning to have doubts because we fucked up a little bit last time, and now we have not three hench people, but four hench guys who are becoming summoning monsters and spreading infection all over the place. And she's kind of having these kind of doubts then about whether she is up to the job. She's kind of, again, the episode is to quit or not to quit, a confused Hinata. And it's just, I appreciate that there is this kind of through line, again, by watching these in bunches like I am right now. This kind of through line where it's like, there is these doubts emerging in the team, and Hinata is has a kind of personality where she's second guessing herself because she's someone who's, kind of acts before they really think, and then they might mess something up and they kind of would be like, oh, sorry, I'll do this and I'll fix it. And that might just make it worse or just like pile on the pressure on somebody else. I kind of like how that's not a character trait that can be just kind of resolved easily with a lesson at the end of the episode, or something that's kind of inherent to her, that she has this self-doubt within her that's coming to the fore in situations like this. I can see later on down the line, like, we have our first fight, Nodoka and Rabarin go their separate ways, so there is sort of this discord emerging in the team. And as well, we're getting more added to the ranks of the bad guys side as well. It was interesting that they went with a koipu / inutria as the animal that gets turned into it, because beating up on them, you find that they are actually an invasive species that can cause great destruction to the local plant life and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, well, what is one of those dogs souped up with evil power going to do to the environment? But yeah, it's some interesting things, some little things starting to emerge here. I like this element of struggle, besides just punching out big monster dudes, this struggle with themselves and with their own things that isn't resolved tidily. It's this ongoing thing that try to build in themselves as it goes on. Because Nodoka had a long time getting out of the hospital and getting back up to full health again, so the guys got a long way before they can get up to being full power precures instead, and so it'll be a difficult road with many tough challenge ahead of them, and I'm liking that there's this as glimpses of it here, not these all-powerful, this team who isn't like freshly minted and get the job done every time. They're actually, you know, they can get it done kind of messily. It works, but it's, they've gotten lucky so far, and now they need to reconsider their approach to it. Otherwise, this thing is going to swallow them up. And thus again, reflective of the fact that this is the pre-cure iteration that's all about, you know, doctors and being in good health and taking care of yourself, and we're in the midst of a global health crisis, that even these girls are struggling and they've got superpowers. So, you know, it's whether it was intentional or not, again, it's like nice how it's kind of reflective of what's going on in the real world. And that's what a good pre-cure show should be. It should be something you can empathize with and find relevance to your own experiences with, you know. Sorry, back to the dinosaurs.
Meanwhile, back at the convenience store, it's Christmas.
Oh, God, I was gone that long.
And, yes, I can't remember Kaide's colleague's name yet, but she's wearing a Christmas outfit. And so Kaide's like, she says, oh, there's one for you too. And then she puts it on and it's like, well, I don't want to be the only one not wearing a costume if people are wearing costumes. Even if there's only two of them, so it could just be you're the only one wearing a costume when nobody's wearing a costume.
Yeah, but you're going to look like a right fucking that's kid true, if you're not yes. wearing the costume and your fucking yeah. co-worker's wearing a costume.
Now, I'm saying that's... She's doing it, yes, to... yeah. That's not really the reason why she's doing it. That's just the way why she's saying she's doing it. And so, yeah, they're working, and then who rolls in but her best friend, her ex, and her dinosaur? And at least two out of the three are drunk.
It's hard to tell with the dinosaur, honestly. Apparently he was partaking in the drinking. Yeah, that's
happy
true
to be
yeah.
here. Happy to be involved.
Dinosaur's wearing a reindeer antlers.
So he's wearing a costume?
Yep. Sosuke is trying to buy Oden for the dinosaur. Let me treat you.
I did like his conversation in the back. I was like, there's no fucking way you're a dinosaur, man. You know, it was
that's
good.
So crazy. You're crazy.
And Kylie's with her best friend. So I thought he didn't like Sasuke. She's like, oh, no, he's all right. Then she's like, where have you been drinking?
Yeah, because it wasn't so much she went drinking with her ex-boyfriend. It's just that she happened to meet her ex-boyfriend and the dinosaur out while they were drinking and joined them drinking.
They've been drinking at my house. So they're like, she said, the dinosaur said we could do it.
Imagine your dog invited your best friend and your ex over to get fucking pissed on Christmas Eve while you're working.
The dinosaur's fairly nonplussed reaction as... permission to enter and start boozing it up in here. You seem pretty okay with the idea.
Yeah. But it's the scowl she gives the dino, and then his just like beatific grin on his face with his antlers on.
Yeah, she kind of looks at him and is like, okay, fucking get me one of those as well. I'm going to be drinking with you after work. Because it's kind of like, yeah, if I saw that face, I would also want to go drinking with it.
Can't break his little heart. He's happy. He's wearing the gear. He's on the pub crawl with the lads. Well, no, was going out and getting more beers or whatever. But yeah, out with the lads. Yeah. It's great.
And she invites a work colleague as well, her new friend, who shares her dinosaur books with her. And they're going to make a party of it. And then the next short is sort of the after effects of the party when everybody's passed out.
And live action.
Also, Santa came.
Santa has brought a present for Dino, and he's so happy with his lump of coal.
Ah, fucking shiny rock! No way! How did they know?
Which begs the question, how bad has he been? What has he done that Santa has decided he's been bad this year?
Back in the Jurassic period, or whatever it was, he killed the dinosaur that later was... whose remains were compressed down and fossilized and made that coal.
Ah. Or maybe time travel is like super illegal.
Yeah, maybe one short eye ratted him out to the time police.
But then, yes, in the live action, it is also after a Christmas party and Kylie's passed out on the bed and Dino's watching TV. He's watching... is it Zakoshi or Pops Off?
Hollywood Zakoshi or...
yes.
His Christmas special, yep.
Yeah. And he starts feeling faint.
Yeah, he falls asleep watching it.
And then we get what turns out to be the end, an extended dream sequence where his favourite comedian is in his house.
Is it a dream sequence? Because the hat is there afterwards.
That's true. And the show just becomes unhinged.
It wasn't ever on hinges, though. I don't know, man.
It does read like a dinosaur is brought into the modern day and is exposed to fucking social media culture, and it's the only way to know how it experiences the world is through like TikTok videos and Snapchat filters. That's from what this whole fantasy then is just like is printed out. Oh yeah, I seen Kaya do her little social media bit. She's like doing the cute little poses. But what if my favorite comedian was doing that and putting his weird faces and going like, "Ee!"
I mostly found it funny when everyone in the studio and himself were bearing restrained laughter. That was pretty good. I enjoyed that.
I always like to hear that when they're breaking it and it's just cracking up. But it's just the camera like operator, the boom mic person, they're just like going, you're like not way in the back of the room.
I don't know whether some of the mannerisms because it feels like he's doing like lots of micro impressions of people. As part of his, I don't know if it's supposed to be Stan Hansen or someone from that era, because he mentions Satoru Sayama at some point. But then there's the bit where he's lucidly talking about, like, what a great comic it is, but then he's interrupting himself.
There's bits of him edited and bits of the other people edited in to make him look stupider, and also they kind of blow his face while he's talking just seriously.
Yeah, that's
very strange.
That's the Zakoshi and Zakoshi and Galan Dinosaur subliminal message segment where they just start playing this weird shit. It's like frames dropped here and there of things. It's like picture of Kaede, but it's just in your mind now. Did I see a frame of that? I don't know. Did I? It's just getting into your mind. Brian, you gotta live with this right now, by the way. Are you ghostwriting this? Because it feels like this is just like fucking racking up material for some of your panels here.
No, I'm not. But yes, it does feel very, like listeners, this is very much on my wavelength. I do like the bit where Kaede's waking up and he's like, well, I've got to hide the comedian in the bathroom. You can't go in the bathroom, Kaede.
Yeah, because she comes home and is like, whew, I'm going to take a shower. And he's like, fucking no. And the reaction where he changes, I think it's like he goes like, you know, he's like weird sort of like what kind of face that he makes to denote the end of his joke, as far as I can tell.
What?
But that used in the bathroom where she's kind of like, what? And he's like, what? Huh? And it's a good bit.
Then they find the hat, start fighting over it, and then we cut to the outside and his head in a circle appears and he's like, let's play again real soon outside of Dreamland next time. So I guess he was the suspicious character outside the flat in the previous episode.
I don't know if I can still call him unthreatening after this. But not as threatening. How about that?
That's interesting, man. To be sure.
He is. Because I was looking at his Wikipedia page. He's about a year older than me. But he didn't get started until quite late. I think he was like, or at least this character, I think he might have been like parts of sketch groups before that.
Right.
Clearly. I think that tends to be the thing with a lot of these Japanese variety comedians, is you like graft until you hit on a character.
And then you try
and run with that character as long as you possibly can. Unless you're creatively frustrated, and then you might want to carry on doing other things on the side. Which I can't remember which, it was like one of the Shin-chan movies where there's these women who play an elderly couple, and they do those characters on the Shin-chan movie. But when you look at their YouTube channel, they do loads of other characters. It's just like, clearly they do all the other characters they want to do as well. It's just those are the two characters people want to see.
Those are the popular ones that everyone likes. Yeah.
And some episodes of Kitaro I found were great for that, giving us insight into the Japanese media industry, because a lot of it was about some media personality, whether a comedian or a singer or a presenter or something like that, having some kind of problem, and then a yokai should come out and solve it. But it's just, you get some insight into the way they produce these things and how they can kind of appeal to this certain, I wouldn't call it the most common denominator, but this kind of this gimmicky thing. Let's do this all the time. Say the line, Bart. Say the line.
Yeah, there's definitely like trying to appeal to what's the popular thing, but also trying to vary that up so it doesn't become stale. It's a weird kind of combination.
Mm. Yeah, I think sometimes it's like having like a visual thing that people recognize you for, and then you can do other stuff. It's just people know it's you because you're doing, they can latch onto the visual element. It doesn't just have to be the act element.
Yeah, like, you know he's Picotaro because he's dressed like Picotaro right now, exactly. That kind of yes. Thing. Yeah.
Like, even if we simplify, you see the haircut, you see the other jacket, you see the mustache drawn on with a pencil, you know, that's Picotaro or some, like, caricature of him. So that's their involvement, yeah.
Like I said, that interview I found where with him and the other two guys behind the character, and that, yeah, basically they, like, latched on to the idea. Well, they realized it was music fans making the character big, not comedy fans. It was people who were fans of the music sharing the videos. It wasn't people who were fans of the actual comedy character or the guy's previous comedy. And so that's why they lent heavily on the music after that. And they managed it quite well. I guess it kind of feels a little bit like he's trying to put the character behind him now with,
like you say, branch out and do other things.
Yeah.
Because only so far you can get it before it becomes stale.
He was doing Kira Major, and, but yeah, he did break him out for doing a concert in his own home. Even before he was being extra careful before the Japanese government were telling everybody to extra careful. Righty-ho. That is it, I think, for this week. We're all showed up.
There'd be a drop off in volume for next time.
Yes. So that was episode 150 of Let's Go.
Jesus.
Wow.
So the only thing which has dropped off is Apparently Radman.
And Millionaire Detective.
Yeah, I get you. Nothing else is listed on that page of things that they've got on Anime News Network, of delays. So currently, I can only fit in two more things.
Won't hear any more Precure for a while.
No. I think Carbon Rider's carrying on a little bit longer. There's definitely another episode next week.
Woodpecker Detective's Office, that wasn't getting delayed or anything, was it?
Not that we know of.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I thought there was something else, but I must have just read something else.
No, we may have got lucky, or people aren't telling anybody.
Did we skip Wacky TV Nana now?
We did skip Wacky TV Nana. I do apologise. Thanks for spotting that.
Bloody hell. Sorry, no, I was just going over my list here. I was like, who else here has been? And I was like, oh, fuck.
I went to go check the list on my phone, but then the phone died in my hand before I could scroll back to the message.
I was so keen to talk about listeners, I leapt over it. That's
quite alright.
Well, speaking of the inner workings of the Japanese TV industry.
Perfect. Wacky TV Nanana.
Episode 2. Voyage on the good ship Cost Performance.
So, the brochure looked fucking great for this whole thing.
All you can drink, 3 meals a day.
Yeah, all you can drink, 3 meals a day. And they have their own indoor spa. It's a kiddie pool that smells of wee or something. The 3 meals a day are all dried squid. Actually, probably not even dried squid now that I think about it. And it's the captain who can drink all day.
Yes. But, despite appearances, he's a very capable helmsman and manages to steer them out of trouble involving sharks and sharp rocks and the bested iceberg that sank the Titanic, which is still
easily
sinking in this universe, is still there.
I did enjoy all that really fucking cheap animation and CGI sharks that really fucking tickled me for some reason. It's very good. It was just very like, oh, he's dodging all the rocks, like not going in a direction a ship could go.
It's a good season for CGI sharks between this and Dino.
There must have been a fucking a sale on CGI sharks.
Buy this asset. only 500 yen.
The spa is the kiddie pool, but it fills up with seawater splashed over the edge of the boat.
That's what it was. Okay. It's
like a seaweed wrap for your whole body.
But yeah, our main guy is kind of like really impressed. I was like, okay, they knew their shit hiring this guy because this guy's got the skills.
He's like a kung fu like a drunken master, but driving a ship.
He keeps trying to tell them a fucking anecdote about this guy that he knows as well, but he never gets to it.
I looked up those names. I couldn't get anything that made sense out of it.
Well, I mean, he is very drunk. He might be slurring them considerably.
But that was it, because these are very short episodes.
Yeah.
They make Extra Olympia Kyklos look like a motion picture. That really is it this time. Guys, when are we doing the Dr. Katz episode of Secret of the Sailor Madness?
My God, we'll be recording that on May 3rd, if my records are correct.
Oh,
I will double check that. Right. At the end of recording here, but Dr. Katz, I've been digging into that. Looking at some of the videos that they did, and a few reunion shows after the end of the series, which kind of done live on stage, but same formula. Dot and Katz, be a therapist, listen to these comedians, basically do their bit with them. I also looked at an Explosion Bus, which is like a web series that Dot and Katz and another dude were doing, but it's just more of him, just he's very gentle, almost like golf announcer voice, but telling funny jokes. He's a very interesting man, who I thought I knew, but didn't know enough about. So just sticking into that as a whole has been a good trip. But you could hear all about that and more about that in detail when we get to that recording on Sunday, which we'll be hearing about then.
Let's hope it's not double booked with Sunday's Dynamite in the Brain recording. But otherwise, you can check out recent Dynamite in the Brains on twitch.tv/letsgobrian. For some reason, that has not had the same problems with streaming that we've had with YouTube. But maybe, I don't know whether it is YouTube or the connection. I think it's the connection today. I did look online to see how much 10 meter Ethernet cables are. They are twice as much as they used to be. I may be ripping it out of the PlayStation 4 and putting it into the laptop. Because I don't really want to spend £21 on an Ethernet cable. I could possibly get a 10 quid one from Argos.
Really odd.
It's probably just everyone podcasting these days, you know?
Yeah.
Could be that.
Or shipping them rarer. Has become more difficult.
So
if you want to check out, because when we do the anime that didn't make us, there's PowerPoints now to accompany them, so you can see those on Twitch. You won't get to see our beautiful faces, because I still not built the computer which will actually be able to allow me to do that. But building that computer would probably also sort out this streaming issue as well, because I wouldn't need to use two computers anymore. But
Patreon goal there, folks.
That's a fantasy
land. Brian some money.
That's a fantasy land of me. The problem with working from home is you actually have to work, and so you think, people think it's a lockdown, you're stuck at home, but yeah, I don't know. I really, all I have is an hour extra each day that I'm not commuting. That's pretty much it. And I kind of lose that because that just means I've got an hour longer in bed in the morning.
Well, it's time you're spending wisely for yourself.
That's true. That is true. Generally feeling a lot healthier. I just wish I could go out for a walk, but the NHS says I should not go out for a walk. So, except for food or medicine. So I'm having to stop that urge, and I'll have to find other ways of exercising now that I feel well enough to do that. But otherwise, you guys staying sane, lockdown, or are you still having to go out, Niall?
I still feel a pinch of it there earlier in the week, but I think that's the one of a case of night brain being on the night shifts. It does things to your brain's chemistry, in which make it go a little bit harder yourself than you really should be doing. So I think kind of compounded by the current situation. But at the moment, still having to go in and out. I've been trialing this work from home setup. Right here is this kind of, it's taken over the entire dining table in our front room here. But it won't be there for long. But it seems to be fairly straightforward. Most things work on it now. Though it's only a matter of time before they stop calling us into the physical office, at least all of us anyway, or as many of us. At the moment in there, it's masks in for the entirety of your shift inside. Even though you kind of sequestered inside your individual rooms when you're running the channels at where it's up at the moment, I guess they're taking every precaution that they can. I suppose it's just for kind of moving between areas, you know, out to the kitchenette or anything like that, which is itself has its own restrictions put in place. Just wear the mask around and be mindful of what you're touching, wash your hands, just disinfect your keyboards and things when you come in, with the antibacterial wipes and all that kind of jazz. But otherwise, yeah, I'm trying to build some better habits. Just to spend this time trying to engineer a routine, because we're going to be this kind of situation for a little while yet, and there's no point.
Yes, I would not expect us to be at any conventions this year, even though those conventions have not been cancelled yet. The big convention I was going to in August has been cancelled now, so...
I think it's more so like a lot of stuff, even if we do get out sooner, it's probably going to happen. I imagine it's actually going to drag on, but I'd say it's a lot of the setup that can't be done, as well as like actually hosting the event during crisis. Yeah.
Yeah. There was some folks got together there and they're going to like have basically an anime convention in lockdown. They're going to host the events for us on a streaming channel or something like that. And you just log in, there's going to be like a presentation about History of Shonen Jump on this like 1 PM Eastern Standard Time. I can just like tune in a channel and just like have somebody talk to you about Shonen Jump for an hour. You can chime in with comments, I suppose. Which sounds interesting.
It does sound interesting. I did see that. I was like, you know what my panels are like. They're a copyright takedown. Nightmare.
Same. But there's a few I have, but I could probably like re-engineer those for that format. I could like probably do Too Many Nobunagas in that fashion, perhaps, or I could do the one I was planning to redo again for this year was the alcohol and the anime cocktail hour that I had on there. So and that's, I could probably get away with just some stills and talking like this. I got some copious notes on that. So, you know, I consider it, if it's an opportunity, then why not go for it? And those people are probably crying out for panels and things to try and get them through this thing. Because, as I say, it's not going to be a return to normality anytime soon. Now, we've gotten over the shock of it, but it's an ongoing thing. It's about time to try and reconcile yourself with the fact that this will be the way things are for a long time. So try and learn to adapt to it and... Learn to adapt to it in a healthy manner and do what's best for yourself and try and get on with your own things.
I imagine the constant wanking's got boring at this point.
Red roll. Some people are trying to fucking make the world fucking record, you know?
By coming in an A&E with like fucking third degree chafing. Not what our health service needs right now.
Yeah, but on the convention panel things, I'm like, because the Amicon's the next one, which hasn't been cancelled yet. I suspect we won't hear until end of June on that. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, it seems like a fool's errand to put work in on my panels.
I'm just doing it very gradually.
Yeah.
The only thing I was building up on for that Amicon, well, I guess I still am, because it's officially unannounced otherwise, was just like getting more fight scenes for Hell in a Cell, which I might finally like follow your advice on that from a long time ago, Brian, and just maybe like slightly rebrand as Hell in a Cell, because I think I will get more, discoverability, because it won't be confused with people who misspell Hell in a Cell when they're like reposting old WWE matches onto YouTube or something like that. But anyways, it does involve like just watching some old stuff or different stuff, and there's seems got cool fight scene in it. Judo Boy, they got up in high dive. It's a gold mine for this shit. So I've been gradually going through that.
Yeah, well, obviously Gallant Dinosaur is spoiling me rotten for Christmas clips for
Hibalicon's you can really prepare ahead of your time, yeah.
But yeah, I'm thinking even November seems optimistic, because I think lots of places are saying no big meetings for this year at all.
I mean, like, any bit of luck, best of thing towards the end of the year, it'll just be lapsed a little on the rules, but I imagine the rules will still be in place.
I'll just have special conventions where only people who've already had it can come along.
Mask conventions just for the sick. Everyone get in this building and we won't set it on fire. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm not preparing anything other than podcasts for the moment, I think.
Fair enough.
But that means we'll be back next week with another bumper helping. I've been eyeing things up to take the spots, you say. Oh, yes, I've been finding what's on Crunchyroll. I've got my eye on you, Gundam Wing, and NG Night Lamoon and 40. I know where you live, and I know where your episodes are. We'll be back next week with more. Let's go!
Adios.